Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 308 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, and send you over to Jason Rugard. He has a rundown for us.
On tonight's show, we have trivia, as always, a couple things to talk about in the news and movie world, and reviews for seven films. Eight films.
Oh, boy.
Four trailers, including the latest from Chris Pratt, Nicolas Cage, and Jennifer Lawrence. But first, let's start it all off with a little bit of trivia here. This is a pretty interesting question. I didn't know the answer to this, but which director, which modern blockbuster director, I should say, has never received a rotten score for any of his films, and his lowest rated movie is at 76%. The answer here is both surprising and obvious.
Is it? Steven Spielberg.
Please.
Michael Bay.
You're right. You're saying Michael Bay's never had a movie that's been certified.
You said it was surprising.
I mean, we both are huge Michael Bay fans, and we can agree that Part 2 of Transformers is definitely below that 76% approval rating.
I don't know then.
Michael, you're sticking with the Michael Bay answer, huh?
Oh, sure.
I feel like this is the Saturday Night Live parody of Family Feud.
Yeah, I mean, who else would it be? I don't know. I could go through the list, but
who else could it be? No, he's never had a. Let me rephrase this, because he seemed to not be grasping this. Which director has never had a movie rated rotten? Not fresh, but rotten. Which one has never had a bad score? It's definitely not Michael Bay.
Brett Ratner.
Wait, once again, I think you're misunderstanding the question. We'll go ahead and stop this whole madness here. It's Christopher Nolan. Has never had a movie rated rotten on Tomatoes, and his lowest rated movie is The Prestige at 76% approval rating. So I've never seen The Prestige.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I never saw Insomnia either. Should I see Insomnia? I keep flirting with the idea. It's on Netflix. No?
No.
It's not worth it. Yeah, it didn't really grab. I mean, I like, obviously, Williams and Pacino, but there's something about that movie that's very
it's not that great.
Interesting.
I mean, Prestige is interesting, but it's, Nolan's so heavy-handed, you know. Batman movies worked really well in, but his other stuff is just, it beats you over the head with the symbolisms, just with everything. It's a bit much.
When The Prestige came out, it came out against The Illusionist, which I chose.
Which it killed.
It did, but I saw that one instead, so I didn't have any time to watch
really, The Prestige is much better.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't mind.
At least more interesting.
Minor.
Yeah, but The Prestige is more interesting. In the vein of Nolan's stuff.
Okay.
It's weird. Weird plot twists. You may see coming because you're more of a film guy, but kind of like a Sixth Sense type of a movie. But Christopher Nolan is basically the new M. Night Shyamalan, right?
Wait, with the big surprise endings and twists. And
right, yeah, like the weird things and then the twists and stuff. I mean, he basically is that, you know.
Where did you stand on Interstellar? I can't recall. Were you a fan?
Not a fan.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. Had that in common there. Let's go on and talk about The Crow, which is finally getting its, they're suggesting that it's getting off the ground after years in reboot hell. Not that this should be rebooted, I don't think, but they do have an interesting lead actor for the main role. And I wasn't behind this project, but all of a sudden I think this might be going in the right direction. Jason Momoa, fresh off of Justice League, is going to be starring as Eric Draven in this Crow reboot. What do you think?
It's interesting. I like Jason Momoa. This is kind of a bad guy role in a way, right?
Yeah, it's an anti-hero.
Yeah, so I really liked him in the Stallone. What was that?
Bullet to the Head.
Yeah, Bullet
great.
To the Head. I really thought he was really good in that as the bad guy. So, give him another role where he doesn't speak much, which I imagine this would be. And as kind of a bad guy, he playing good guy, obviously, in this, I think he could work. But I don't know. Don't you really need for this? It works so well with a martial arts type guy. Don't you need that kind of for this?
I think he's got somewhat of a look, but he's a little bit too hulking. You know,
he's too big, right? He's not a martial artist, as you might normally think.
Well, I think Brandon Lee was just perfect in this role, so it's going to be hard to follow in that footstep, even though it's now very, very dated, that movie.
Well, and even though many people have.
Yeah, they've tried. I thought the third one, that Crow Salvation, mm-hmm. was pretty successful. I thought the sequel was rancid, but the third one was okay. It's a strange franchise in itself. It's had a lot of...
It's a Miramax franchise, so that's why it's been just slaughtered, right?
Yeah, I mean, Iron Chef host Mark Dacascos was the Crow at one point on television, so...
I like Mark Dacascos.
So do I. He's okay in the show.
I agree.
A cheap show. Next, we have Super Troopers 2, which is finding its funding through crowdfunding. Now, it's say that three times. It's $2 million it's raised on Kickstarter, and it looks like it's a go. This is another in the crowdfunded reboot. Worked out really mm-hmm. well for Veronica Mars. This is on the level, though, of something like Blue Mountain State, which I thought was appealing, but you didn't like at all. Are you interested in this all, or is this like time to go away with Super Troopers?
Yeah, because I still, I like the Broken Lizard stuff. I even like the stuff that people didn't like when they were going out of style. So
I like Club Dread quite a bit.
I like Club Dread a lot. Yeah, no one did. That was kind of the killer one. I did like Slammin' Salmon. I liked that one. Beer Fest obviously is fucking excellent. But these were all on the downhill after Super Troopers, if you will. I think mainly because... they just aren't mainstream enough, even though they try to sell them as that. So I'm down for going back to the roots, and getting some Super Troopers too.
These are very spotty, though, these productions. I mean, like I said, you like Veronica Mars, but some of these don't turn out as well. That's probably up the upper echelon of these fans-funded reboots.
I don't know. I mean, the Veronica Mars one was, I have a lot of complaints with. It was essentially a let's get the cast back together movie, It really didn't pan out to be worth a shit. So as a movie, I mean, I liked it. Yeah, sure. Cause I like Veronica Mars and I like the cast. So I'd like to see them get back together. But if you're not into that cast reunion, it's not really, what's the fucking point of the movie? And it really turned out that there was no reason to make a Veronica Mars movie.
Well, there wasn't a point for the
I don't know.
Movie either, just to get that cast back.
No, and I didn't like that movie either. That movie was terrible as well. It was horribly written and just, I don't know. You need a concept at least. And maybe the Broken Lizards guys will have a concept, especially, I don't know if these guys have kind of broken apart, but some of them, obviously Jay, the Indian guy or,
the darker skinned guy.
Yeah. I don't know if he's actually from India, but the name sounds Indian. He's been pretty prevalent as a director, and has done some pretty big things. So maybe getting all these guys back together at this point, maybe they make a really good movie.
Maybe it's like a Monty Python type thing where they all go off, like a Gilliam does his work and it's a different genres and plays around. They all come back together and fart around here and there and do something good. So the first one, I was never the biggest fan of Super Troopers. I thought it was
one of the weaker ones
in their whole canon. I like the offbeat ones.
I like Beer Fest and Club Dread, I think, are my favorites.
Yeah, and I closely followed by the restaurant one.
Slammin' Salmon. Yeah,
yeah, I keep wanting to call it Swingin' Salmon, but it's Slammin' Salmon. I thought that was really underrated. All right, we got a bunch of reviews for you guys tonight. And first off, I want to talk with you about something that you caught up with. And that was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, the second follow-up the follow-up to the reboot here. And in my opinion, it's going to be harsh to say, I think it's the worst Turtles movie of all fucking time. And I saw
worse than the third one?
Worse than the third one, even. I swear to God, I hated this movie.
I didn't hate it. I felt a lot about... this is kind of an X-Men Apocalypse of the Ninja Turtles movie. It exists. It's not necessarily poorly made, but it just exists. It's just there and they go through it. And you think, what's the fucking point? Like, I don't know how many times can you watch good guys, bad guys, things happen? I don't know. I didn't like the Casey Jones characters in this.
He was so weak.
Stephen Amell, who plays Arrow on the TV show Arrow, is really good as fucking Arrow. Like, he's a fucking tough guy. He's like Batman, essentially. He's
doesn't
badass.
Doesn't register here at all. He's blank.
Doesn't work. He's half the time he's a miss. He's just a fucking doof, a moron. And then the other half of the time he's smart. It doesn't make any sense.
Megan Fox is barely in this.
Too much, which is the travesty of it all, is Megan Fox and Will Arnett are both barely in this. And they are, you know, the human grounding of the fucking show. That's for me, you know, that they, I'm in this because of them, you know.
This is my problem too with this movie.
They're my conduit, if you will.
They dumbed this way down. The first one was kind of a sly reboot to our generation that grew up with this and appealed to kids. This is solely a play for the kids. But this is the second one again,
except it's stupid. You know, if you go watch Secret of the Ooze, it's fucking awesome.
I know.
I mean, just a super shredder. You know, it's fucking awesome. This movie misses out on all that shit, but it's a carbon copy in a way. It's like a really bad, shitty, like, you know, 10th generation fucking photocopy of the fucking second movie.
The only original, it's just bad. The only interesting idea in this entire movie is that they gave that Will Arnett character who took credit for all the happenings of the first one. He became a cause celeb. That was the only inventive.
But they use that in a way to keep him out of the movie.
Which was terrible, like you said. Yeah. And I thought this was a very gravely disappointing, and even at short running time, I was highly bored. And
it's a children's movie, right? When you're watching this, and they reintroduce the Ninja Turtles, and that was my first clue. I thought, oh shit, this is really for kids at this point. They're like, oh, we're excited. It's the Ninja Turtles. It's like, yeah, it's fucking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. Like, I fucking know them already.
The first one or the first? It's not even the
second one, man. I mean, this is the fucking sixth one, really. If you're talking major movies, this is the sixth major Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, since I've been alive. Who they are by now.
Yeah, like, I'm good. I don't need an introduction.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed at that. You know, I caught up with Sausage Party a little late in the game here, and I'm kind of tell you, man, it's not only the best comedy of the year, it's probably going to go on my best of the year. It by far is one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time. And yeah, it's the whole Pixar for adults thing, but the writing here, there's laughs in almost every scene. There's clever things on the level of, you know, it says Pixar, raunch Pixar. It really reminded me of Mel Brooks-esque stuff that where it's not even Bruckers and Abraham, where it's all visual sight gags, but it's such verbal puns and such interesting analogies. You know, there's a Edward Norton. I don't also want to talk about it because I don't want to give away too much, but Edward Norton voices a bagel. And, you know, there's another guy who voices a falafel. And they're talking about the Jews and the Palestinians. And they're arguing over shelf space and aisle space, you know, like as the Gaza Strip. And it's very clever in what they're doing. The bad guy is voiced by Nick Kroll, who's a douchebag. He's an actual douchebag. I mean, it's fucking hilarious. Nick Kroll almost steals that movie with his line readings and his Jersey bodybuilder tough guy who's calling out everybody. And, you know, it's just like he's just a douchebag. It's really, really entertaining. All the regulars from that Rogan company show up, and I can't wait for you to see it so we can talk about it more. Outside of maybe a musical number in the beginning that I didn't need, which reminded me a little bit too much of the Lego movie, but on the raunch side, I could have done with that without that. But otherwise, brilliantly written, honestly. It should be considered when we're talking about best original screenplays for the year. It's that clever.
It won't be, though.
I know. That's the sad part about it, especially if the Golden Globes, you know. But that's truth, because it's not easy to write that. It's the closest thing we're going to get to a Blazing Saddles in our time, you know. It is very, very smart.
I'm interested. There was a little bit of a debate over it, wasn't there, about politics type stuff? Some sort of sexism thing in there? Is that?
I wouldn't say sex. I mean, no. Good God, people are looking for – and there's so much more to be offended about by that movie. How could you find that in all things? You know, I mean, there's so many – there's jokes. I mean – when he tells her you couldn't fit an eggplant in there, they're clearly talking, you know, about – a darker race, if you will. So, you know, they show the eggplant, and he's supposed to be an African American guy by the look and the build and everything, the way he's dressed and acting and speaking. And it's played for laughs, and it's funny. It's the kind of shit Mel Brooks was doing. You know what I mean?
It's
equally offending everybody, and at the same time, it's coming across as the smartest thing in the room. It doesn't sit back. It doesn't contend to be lazy. And I've seen a lot of lazy comedies this year, and this is not one of them at all.
Well, I do want to see it.
What'd you think of Spectre? You finally caught up with this James Bond one. Another boring one.
I feel like, and I just happen to watch all these movies, and I'm not really this down on movies. I just happen to watch all these ones at the same time, and yeah, it's just like fucking, it's a James Bond movie. I mean, just nothing happens. He just goes through it. He's James Bond, you know, and he falls in love for the millionth fucking time. And they try to make it into a thing. Like, does it matter? that he's in love. And you think, no, it's fucking James Bond. In the next movie, the bitch won't be there. She'll be right. gone. Right? Who knows where? Who knows how it has? She died. She fucking left him. They won't even talk about it. Who fucking knows, right? So what are they trying to do? Why are they trying to make a decent opening? I thought the action was decent in this, but as compared to, you know, James Bond in general, yeah, action sequence. Okay. You know, this to me wow me, really wow me. Come on, guys. I want more.
If Casino Royale, to me, is the high point of the Bond, the Craig Bond films. It still is. I know Skyfall gets a lot of press.
Because it's trying to, it's the least deepest of them all, right? I mean, why are they trying to be so deep with it all of a sudden?
Like, because he's got to have feelings deep. About everything he does, because they have to overthink things now. But in this film particularly, I think that it made me appreciate Skyfall even a little bit more. I liked Skyfall, yeah, I agree. It grew on me, but I just appreciated what they were – at least that was successful in what they were trying to do, whereas this is all over the place. And it's a huge wasted opportunity of Batista as a great bad guy and Christoph Waltz, who could have been doing something.
They just weenie out on the Batista kill.
Don't they? That's a very. Yeah. I couldn't believe I mean, that was the gone. Way he was. He died. I thought that's the way you kill the second
guy. And Christoph Waltz as a bad guy is weak, 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 weak. Especially after you know, like we talked about Javier Bardem in the episode preceding this with pirates and stuff. God, what a great bad guy, right? What a great Bond villain. And then Christoph Waltz, he's just like. And again, you know, and I'll compare this to X-Men Apocalypse because I think that every movie is fucking basically this. How can the baddest ass James Bond villain, the guy who orchestrated all other James Bond villains, right? And every fucking problem that James Bond's ever had, this guy orchestrated it. And he just is so fucking weak. Just so weak. I mean, are you kidding me? This is the baddest ass one. How can they keep doing this?
Well, he ranks just above the bad guy from Quantum of Solace at this point, to be honest. I mean, the bad guy who cried blood in Casino Royale and Javier Bardem's bad guy from Skyfall are way more interesting because they at least pose a certain level of threat. Where Christoph Waltz, I think maybe him playing the villain is just getting way he's hardly played in the movie. Out. But he not only is he not in the movie, he doesn't do anything in this movie. They don't give his character literally anything to do. He
spots James Bond a lot. He goes, I see you, Bond.
And for being Blofeld, sees him later. It's not a huge reveal. I mean, I felt like this was the con moment of Spectre, you know, like, oh, it's Blofeld. No shit, it's Blofeld. It's called Spectre. You know, I mean, if right. it's called Wrath of Khan, of course you can expect that it's fucking Khan's in the movie.
I just wish they had done something with him that was worthy of the title, you know?
It just turns out so far that out of the four Craig Bond films, only two of them have been interesting. And the other two have been – I mean, Quantum of Solace still is the low mark. This is still a notch above that, I'd say. With you said the action's well done. It has a sleekness to it. It has it a certain vibe, you know.
It just I just wish it mattered a little bit it's more, unspectacular. I guess. I don't know. I mean, it has some funny moments too. You said the opening action sequence, and it does. And that kind of gets you in the mood a little bit, but I don't know. I wish there was some sort of weight to it, right? That shifted around in there. And basically, you know, it comes down to just having an extremely weak villain.
And they found a way to bring Judi Dench back. Can you believe it? Even though it's like a recorded message. Like, oh, here we go again with the M stuff. Thought we got rid of her. I mean, she's been killed off twice in the Pierce Brosnan one, World Is Not Enough, and in Skyfall, yet she's still around.
It's oh, amazing. She's coming back.
She's haunting me.
Well, Ralph Fiennes is...
useless.
Oh, I was gonna say Dame Judi Dench, but okay. Hey, they're the same person. Yeah, he is useless, isn't he?
I saw Don't Breathe.
And did you breathe?
But not for a lot of it. This is not a horror film like it's been advertised. This is more of a intense crime thriller. This is the film about the Detroit gang, you know, hoodlums that bust into the house. This almost reminded me of the kind of movie that Walter Hill did, like Trespass. Remember that one? Where it's done in a very urban, rundown kind of thriller. Look. Yeah, it's much of a thriller. Stephen Lang's great in this. Is the blind vet who's stalking about the house, who has all these booby traps set up. And there is a really nice twist in the third act that I didn't see coming that involves a turkey baster and some goo.
Someone getting pregnant?
And when you see this, you're going to see what I'm talking about. And it's the kind of movie, it mixes a little bit of Cujo. There's a killer dog that it causes quite havoc as well with this. And it's almost like the people under the stairs mixed with Cujo. Mm-hmm. Is the best way I can describe it.
Hmm.
And I think it was fantastic. I really enjoyed this one. I see how they set it up for a sequel. And as often, you know, we bitched a lot on the last episode about things being open-ended. Mm-hmm. It's kind of expected, I feel like, in the horror genre, because this is playing towards that, even though it's not a straight horror film. Yes. It's playing.
You mean that's how we have an Annabelle 2?
Yeah, right. So you have 9 Saws.
Fuck, is that possible? Yeah.
And yeah, this is worthy of that, because this character of the blind vet is pretty intriguing, and I'd like to see a little bit more of him. I don't know what they would do in a sequel. Be hard pressed to do this. Although they've made the Purge. Well,
don't speak. Don't hear.
Very interesting. As it's gone along. There was one called Mute Witness back in the day. Remember that one?
I do remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. But this was worth watching. I think you'd get a kick out of this because you like this genre and the things that's paying homage to. How was The Finest Hours? I didn't want to watch this. It's available on Netflix recently, right?
Don't bother.
No?
Yeah, it is on Netflix.
That bad?
Yeah, I fast-forwarded through a lot of it because, this thing's like an hour. It's just about... It's just... like, I don't know. What the fuck is the deal with people setting things in the certain time periods and making them into these sweeping epics that have nothing to do with what the fucking story's about? The Finest Hours. It's about these guys. It's about Coast Guard. Only it's not.
What is it about?
It's about these dudes and fucking doing shit, and they're living their lives and stuff. It's like, fuck, I don't care, you know? Show me the Coast Guard shit. So we started watching it, and we were like, fuck this. So we fast-forwarded it, you know, an hour in until we get to the Coast Guard stuff. And damned if you just haven't already seen this shit before, and it's just... Now, if you've been to the fucking movies,
that's the problem with this. Yeah,
it's not in a cinematic way to where it really hits you in any fashion, and you just don't give a shit.
Well, it just looked like it was going to really pale compared to Das Boot and The Perfect Storm and things like that.
Which is sad to say. How can it pale and conform to The Perfect Storm? Or, I mean, really? Yeah, no, it does. It's fucking like you've literally seen it. Like it's just it's waves, and they fucking go through the wave. They're like, how are we going to do this? Let's go through the wave. And you're like, no shit. You know, that's what everybody else did. Like, I mean, what the fuck, you know? And so, yeah, I don't know. I just truly, you know, boring is the only way I could say it. And, you know, maybe it might be nice to throw on in the afternoon where you're not really going to pay attention to it. But if you're looking for anything truly engaging, this is not the movie.
It's kind of almost my exact review for Sully, which is a movie that of a great story that is really
that
disengaging.
It's not true.
It's just not
true at all. It's a total lie.
Well, no, they didn't lie about it.
No, they did. They lied about the whole thing, right? I mean, that's the whole thing about this movie, right? Is it's not true.
That's my complaint. Is that the big thing at the end is that there's they hide from him the fact that these simulations that he's fighting against that the pilot
which
failed
never
17
happened.
Times
never happened.
They would tell
though.
You that at the start. They would never hide that from you.
But it never happened, right? I mean, that's not even in the book. It never happened. It's fabricated for the movie, right? That's the thing I really hate about this movie. And true to a point, even to the point where Clint Eastwood, you have him talking about how he read the script and he didn't realize any of this stuff happened. And it's like, dude, it didn't fucking happen. That's why you never heard about it happening. It's not real. This movie's not real. You want to know why? Because it's 2.5 minutes. That's the most exciting part. How do you make a movie around that? You got to make it up, right?
Well, they show he had nightmare
bullshit.
Visions of the crash. This takes place 3 days.
Who cares?
For the 3 days following the
is solely that the interesting landing. Of a person in this movie? Is he that interesting of a person? I guess is the question.
This movie pales in comparison to Captain Phillips in the fact that that was a much better story. It had
but that had a lot of
villain.
Stuff going on. Yeah.
This and it was better performance. I mean, he's good in this movie, and Aaron Eckhart as his co-pilot's good. Mm-hmm. It's competently directed and told, but it's a procedural, and it's a not very engaging procedural. And the fact is, they show you nightmare sequences of how things could have gone down, which sensationalize it, and they show you how it really happened. And by then, they've taken all the steam out of it because you've kind of seen it all before.
It's just, not true.
and the landing itself is interesting how they do it. I mean, it's uh-huh. it's a miraculous thing. The whole that part is done very well. And there's a sequence when he finds out that everybody lived, and the motion that plays on Hank's face is the kind of stuff that they show clips it off.
But that's it. The movie should end there, right? Should
that's
it not?
The moment. But it's also very similar to Captain Phillips when he gets, you know, taken and they do the blood mm-hmm. drawn and he's in hands and he finally releases, which is a great moment in that movie. The thing is, I just kept thinking of Captain Phillips, and even though they're not the same story, it's they're both captains, obviously, but it's still a retelling of a real story. And it's just, this isn't that interesting. It'd be amazing.
Is it though? Sully's not real though. I mean, that's
it'd be a better documentary.
You have to admit that it's not real. It's made up because there's not enough story there. You know,
even
plain
the story
and simple,
they're presenting so. Is a television movie quality.
Oh,
with great
really?
Acting, yeah. It's a procedural.
So it doesn't stand up to other even recent Eastwood stuff, you would say.
No. This is
close.
HBO Films type shit. You know, this
even
is
though this is gonna make more, this is gonna outpace his other stuff.
It's outpacing Snowden. It's a very interesting thing. People can get behind this. I mean
Snowden's made up too. They're upfront about that. I mean, I think Stone is far more upfront about the fact that he makes up his shit. This movie is not, on the other hand, for whatever reason, I don't know why.
It's just not a very good movie. It's a good performance in a very, very average movie.
So how does it stand to like Flight, obviously? Because Flight would be...
I didn't like Flight either, though. I thought the sequence in Flight was great, but I thought the courtroom theatrics and the drinking shit was terrible.
So like the same problem then, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Similar. Yeah. But a much... At least Flight had a conflicted character. I mean, Sully can do no wrong. And I'm fine with that. I have no problem with that. But then what's the point of showing me this character? Like, what's
But the reality is, though, because that's right. You say he can do no wrong, and everyone kind of treats him as this hero and stuff. But he really didn't. He went through. He landed the plane, and that was it, right? And this movie tries to portray more than that. Somehow there was something else that he had to fight against, but there never was, right? He was just a dude. He's just a guy.
Well, yeah, and he didn't have anything in his system. It wasn't like Flight when he was drinking, and they made that a
exactly,
drama. He had no drugs or alcohol in his system. He did everything he was supposed to, and he did a miraculous thing.
So
he saved all these people's lives.
Just a case of that there's no fucking story here? I mean, isn't
I'd
that
rather
just
see
it?
A documentary about the real thing, the real people talking, than this reenactment. That's the problem.
That's probably the reality right there, yeah.
Let's move on and talk about War Dogs, which I think is one of the most underrated movies of the year. This kind of slid by everyone's radar, and I had a mixed reaction to this coming out of the movie, much like Pain and Gain, but it's really grown on me since. Great, great acting here by Jonah Hill, who put on probably 70 pounds to play the role as kind of this...
Which was
really
probably hard for him, I'm sure.
Leecherous, but he looks like Sam Kinison. I kept thinking of Sam Kinison when I'm watching this movie. Like, they should do the biopic of Sam Kinison with Jonah Hill. But Jonah Hill has become such a good actor. You realize it in the sly facial. It's like all that time he spent with DiCaprio and Scorsese and Brad Pitt and these really good directors has
really
paid off.
You don't think that he had that? I mean, Superbad, I thought it was really good in, though.
He was good. He had something, but he is. But I just thought in this movie, like, he found a way to make this character, like, every time he's on screen, you watch this fucker. You want to keep your eye out for him. And not just because of the way it's written, but because of the things he's doing on screen and the weird laugh he gives it and the things that are between the script pages. Miles Teller is competent in this, and he's actually good, but he's out acted here almost every scene, even though it's a less showy role. But good, good little movie. Todd Phillips directs this thing nicely. I mean, if you watch The Hangover Part 3, you almost see that Phillips is doing like a, not even a comedy, but almost like a suspense film there. And he's surprisingly very, very good here and restrained. And Bradley Cooper has a non-credited role that is well and central to the plot. It's almost like Pain and Gain, but less comedic, I'd say.
Well, I think the comparison or the question I would ask is Lord of War.
Yeah, I would say Lord of War mixed with Pain and Gain and Wolf of Wall Street.
So it is like Lord of War then.
In a sense, yeah. Well, it shows the outrageousness in the kind of the irony of it all. I think Lord of War showed a less conflicted person doing it. The Miles Teller character is supposed to be us. It's our kind of entry to it. He's an average Joe that gets caught up in this by a friend who may be his best friend, may not be. And interesting story, though. Sensationalized, sure. Not true. I mean, you can say that about Sully, how we just said it's a lot of it's made up. This has clearly been expanded upon and dramatized. But as a movie, this is a greatly engaging movie, beautifully acted and shot. And I really recommend this.
So why – I mean, this feels like everything that I was talking about, Pain and Gain. So you feel unjustly tanking then?
I don't know. I'm really not sure why this tanks so bad. I think it made a little bit of money, but I think an August release date was probably the best time you could have released this. It's just not a movie that was going to fit into easily explainable. You know, it's very in-depth in what it's talking about, almost Wolf of Wall Street in-depth, where some of it goes flying by, but it's beautifully written. There's a lot of setups and payoffs that are nicely handled. The female in it who plays Miles Teller's wife, I don't know who she is, but she looks exactly like a young Tiffany Amber Thiessen, you know, Kelly Kapowski. I'm telling you, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Beautiful, man. Why did she look
so familiar? This movie is shot really well. They punched up a lot of the colors in here, much like they did in Pain and Gain. The blues are very high. It's Miami sets. Maybe that's another thing that got it. But it's extremely watchable, and I can't wait for you to see it. I like it, just like Sausage Party.
Apparently the Zach Morrison you gets very excited.
You know what's funny is that the movies I saw this week, three out of four of them, I want you to see because I liked them so much, and the three you saw, you hated them. So it's like, I'm curious to see what you think.
Oh,
what
are you gonna do?
So, I know, right? But there is one that I didn't like at all. That's Batman the Killing Joke. I just got to briefly say. Did you see this yet?
I haven't seen it. I mean, people are agreeing with you, which we were surprised at because the trailer looks great.
But this is a 43-page little graphic novel that they've expanded to 90 minutes and tacked on a 40-minute prequel sequence that's totally of the writer's imagination that is fucking terrible. That has nothing to do with nothing. So by the time you get to this stuff that's actually the Killing Joke, the female Batman character, or the Batgirl character, Barbara Gordon, who already gets victimized in that, which is the big kind of hubbub about that story, has already been abused, fucked by Batman. I mean, it's crazy. Seriously?
Like they had sex?
No, yeah, like her and Batman fuck. It's a real, and then they find all these reasons to make an adult thing. Like,
wait, with Batgirl?
Batgirl and Batman fuck on top of a building, bro. Not even playing. I'm not even joking.
It's hard to wrap my head around.
Get your cowl out.
Does that happen in the comic books?
I don't recall, but they're definitely happening.
I mean,
here.
It could be.
There's the rape sequence that was in the, you know, in
right.
with a knife and all that stuff. But
sure,
this was
sure.
No, her and Batman fuck on top
but
of.
But these are,
people.
I mean, most things they play to a point in the comic books. What would be the point of that?
Well, it's the old in and out, my friend. I mean, the point is the climax.
Yeah, I guess so. Right? Well, what's the last one? I mean, Under the Red Hood is the last one I saw that I thought was so fucking good that I just couldn't stop talking about.
I thought Year One was really good, too.
Really?
Yeah, I liked that one a lot. But I liked Batman Under the Red Hood quite a bit. But yeah, Year One I liked, too.
Yeah, recent ones, even the Marvel ones, to be honest with you, have been shit.
They've slipped a little bit. These all used to be really solid. Now they've slipped. I think they're doing a little too much, but I'm looking forward to what was called Batman 66. They've now called it Batman: The Return of the Caped Crusader, which is the Adam West voiced throwback to the 1960s cartoon or television show redone in a cartoon format. So I'm looking forward to that one. I think it comes out in November.
Good.
Yeah, I'm wanting to see that
one. A little
one.
Safer anyways.
Yeah, it's just more, a little bit more fun. I mean, this talk about getting dark and deep. These are beyond brutal.
I'm all good with dark, but just, I don't, you know, I mean, Batman and Batgirl?
Doing the bat dance.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm okay with that. You know?
Yeah, it's definitely different. that's for sure.
Yeah, but we're just being adult to be adult at that
right.
point.
Yeah, like, it's trying to earn its R rating. They say "God damn it" for no reason and "fucking" and you know they make you know they say things they gay slurs. It's a strange little production. It feels very foreign at times. Like it was not made with hands that cared much about it until the part where they already had it all laid out and storyboarded from Frank Miller's comic book. You know, halfway through. It expanded to feature length time for no reason.
Right. For money. Money, money, money.
All right. Let's get into Trailer Addict because we're just rolling through the show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
No, I'm prepared.
I've been prepared my whole life.
Have you seen The Captain? Have you seen Blunt Talk?
I haven't watched that yet. Is it worth watching?
God, I watched an episode of that and it's fucking horrendous. Like,
really?
I wonder if it gets better. I've watched one episode and it's just, you talk about, you know, The Killing Joke. That show is just gross to be gross, you know?
You know, it's funny
for
though.
No reason. It's not,
You have to be fair and say that you typically hate every episode one of any show you watch, and then you go back to it and get into it. Because I can say that about
Supergirl. That's what I'm saying.
Supergirl.
I can say it could get better. Well, I like Supergirl from the beginning, actually. But yeah, I mean, I agree. The Flash, I stopped watching because of that.
Daredevil.
But you've seen the first
couple episodes.
Daredevil's rough the first couple episodes, and then it gets really good, and you can't stop watching. But that's true about a lot of TV shows. So you get a general sense of where something's going at least, and that show is just fucking all over the place, man. I mean, it's not even like you cannot peg that show. I don't know.
That's disappointing. I wanted to like it.
It's
like
very disappointing in general. Yeah,
I like the whole concept of it.
He's not even very good in it because it's just like the material's that bad.
Well, he was saying Patrick Stewart, saying that he liked it so much because he got to do things he's never done before, like play a scene in prison and smoke a joint and things like that. So for him,
he's
as an actor,
he's crazy in that. But it's just there's no solidity throughout the at least that first episode. It's just insane shit after insane shit, and he's just acts insane. Like one second he acts one way and the other second he acts another. And
point of all these cable shows? I mean, that's how Billions started off with the Golden Shower, how True Blood started off with the hand job, how Ballers, the guy fucks the guy's
I disagree.
Mother. I feel like there's a lot of shock value in these shows.
There may be, but this is beyond shock value. It's incomprehensible is what it is. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, True Blood, if anything, if you watch True Blood, it makes more sense in that first season than it does in the last season. That show goes off the rails.
Yeah.
I mean, that's typically what happens. Yeah. It's rare to see something that's just off the rails in the first place because you just I have no grounding for this. I don't know what the fuck I'm watching. I can't grab a hold of anything. I have no idea what's going on.
I felt that way about Shameless. I have friends that really love that show. I never got into it because I felt like it was already at level 10 when I started it.
Yeah, well, that's how this is. It's fucking out there. So I don't know. Maybe it gets better, but my doubt is that it doesn't.
Well, those are our non-streaming online picks. Our streaming online non-picks, I guess, would be the more accurate.
Since we're doing Trailer Addict, let's do streaming. Westworld, watch it, you fucks. It's good.
Exclamation point from this side.
Yeah, I really liked it. It's very.
That should have been on the trailer watching you fuck.
Right? No, it's they really, and this is Christopher, Nolan's brother, Jonathan, and J.J. Abrams, and they really key into that Crichton style, just to a T. And it's if you've seen and you have seen Jurassic Park. And so you know that whole story and that everything about that. Well, here's the beginnings of Jurassic Park, right? Westworld, and it just keys right in on it, and in such a great way.
Did you like the original Westworld?
I did.
Yeah, so did I.
For what it is, I even
I like Future World.
I even enjoy Future World for what it is, even though it's fucking
the lesser sequel of the two.
Yeah, it's kind of a chore to get through, but it is interesting the first time you see it for sure.
Well, it's interesting. I saw it later in life after I had seen Jurassic Park, because I saw that obviously when I was a kid. And you go, okay, so he'd already been toying around with this idea. No wonder Jurassic Park worked so well. He'd already tried and executed a couple of ideas that had things in them that were good but weren't successful entirely. And because you think that Jurassic Park is such a fresh idea as a child. This is a great idea. This is quite cool. And I still think Westworld is a cool idea.
Yeah, it's a great and you should see this version of it because it really takes it to the next level. It takes it to that Jurassic Park level, and it's really surprisingly philosophical and works, and you can tell that the future episodes are going to be even better.
Well, it was a good call then that they canceled Vinyl and put their energies into this. This has been in the making for a while, and apparently it's a big hit so far with Twitter usage. They said it was up about 600% over the Vinyl debut, and online already spiking live plus 3 days in all the viewing. So this is probably going to be their new hit. They need something because Game of Thrones can't run forever, and HBO has done an uncannily good job.
Well, they got a couple more seasons of that. So, yeah, this is a good time to start a new one, I guess, right?
Yeah, but just as The Sopranos was kind of ending its run, they had True Blood, which was which was taken off, and then they had Entourage. They've always had something that's been kind of their lifeline, and always in the nick of time. But I thought Vinyl was going to be it, and I'm surprised it wasn't. Nah. Vinyl wasn't very good.
Nah.
Well, it was spotty, I should say. It wasn't bad. All right, Trailer Addict. Let's get to this. Let's start off with Bastards. The Jason Sudeikis, Owen Wilson comedy. I just saw these guys paired up in Masterminds last week. They were very unsuccessful there. This looks terrible. Is it me? This looks very, very unfunny.
This looks like a great rental.
I wouldn't even say. I wouldn't stream.
Really? No. I would in a heartbeat.
Get out.
Love Owen Wilson. Love Ed Helms. Katie Asselson, love her. I thought the ending bit with Vin Rains was funny. I
that
thought
is Ed
J.K.
Helms.
Simmons was pretty funny.
I thought
funny
that was Jason Sudeikis the entire time.
No, it was Ed Helms, yeah. You know, I think it's a funny premise. I like it. But, yeah, I think I don't see how this plays on a big screen.
I can't believe this is worthy of the release. I thought that.
I don't either. I think this looks like a great streaming movie to me. There was a, I mean, we talked about there's a movie called well, even that, but you know, there's that what is it, Baby Daddy, with Olivia Munn and I think Ed Helms might actually be the guy in it. And then this reminded me a lot of that kind of a level of stuff, or even the, you know, the James, the any of the Adam Sandler stuff,
the Do Over,
the Happy Madison type stuff. You know, it reminds me a lot of that level of stuff. So I'm fine with that. You say it looks terrible. I don't think it looks terrible. I think it looks good. But just on the correct level, like I would not go to the theater to see this. I just would not.
And somebody at Warner Brothers really likes Ed Helms, cause they keep giving him shot after shot of being a leading comedic actor.
Well, what's funny about him is that he bounces around, right? They do straight to video, then they do a theatrical release. I mean, he's in fucking everything, especially from Universal.
I just thought that the Vacation movie was going to take off. I thought it was amusing.
That was actually pretty decent, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was pretty freaking amusing decent. For what it was. A franchise starter, and it just didn't go anywhere. It looks like they're still trying to put him in something at Warner Brothers there.
Yeah.
Let's move on and talk about The Whole Truth, the Keanu Reeves, Renee Zellweger courtroom drama. It looks like it was
the
90s made 1996,
fucking
right?
Drama, right? That's why I put this on here, because first of all, I'm in love with this trailer because I feel
me
like
too.
It's fucking the 90s.
It's a John Grisham movie. We didn't
Holy
know that.
Holy shit. I want to see this so bad. It looks fucking, I don't know, it could be fucking absolutely terrible. And it looks like it probably is. But I'm going to love it. Every minute of it.
Oh my. When I was like, all right, first of all, it starts and I go, okay, so we're in like 1996 here. And then Renee Zellweger pops up. I go, yep, definitely 1996. And Keanu Reeves is trying his best courtroom thing. And I mean, I thought Lincoln Lawyer mixed with 1990s kind of courtroom theatrics. Right. And but hey, I'd watch this thing.
Yeah,
I really would.
Right. I mean, I'm down. Yeah, I don't know how you explain this to people, you know, that this is worth watching. Unless you grew up in the 90s or like that style of filmmaking.
It was like a genre. I mean, the courtroom genre was a big, The Firm.
Right, but this is very much, this isn't like a modern day court drama. This feels like a 90s court drama.
I love
it.
I just watched A Time to Kill and Lincoln Lawyer recently, and this will fit perfectly into that little index.
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln Lawyer, obviously, far more modern, and I don't think this looks like Lincoln Lawyer.
I thought so, with the rich kid doing, you know, maybe a crime.
No,
and
I mean, maybe in comparison
are.
To that, but this feels very, with the whole love thing, you know, I mean, the 90s was always love, right? And he loves Renee Zellweger, and he's like, I got to protect her and shit. That's how it always was in the 90s. Falling in love, it's no good.
I think this is going to be a straight-to-DVD or on-demand release as well. I don't think this is going theatrical. From what I saw.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
I don't know. It says the release is October 21st. I guess we have to wait and see if that's...
if this makes any money. I mean, what if this like reinvigorates the whole courtroom drama subgenre?
That'd be a bit much. I
mean, the $75 million
I don't know. Are you sure?
You got to say that Keanu's best, you know, acting role was probably The Devil's Advocate, where he played a lawyer, right?
Yeah, this looks like straight to DVD. There's a sequel to Krampus.
Oh, good.
I'm sorry. I just had to say, this may come out in theaters.
He's been in a string of these kind of adult-themed thrillers that have come straight to DVD recently. I think
he
Exposed was one of them. And
Exposed. There's the one with the girls. You know,
knock,
him and then they kill him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because I would fuck him and then kill him. That makes sense.
Wait, a mantis?
I sure as shit wouldn't marry him. Right?
Sure. I think you're watching My Own Private Idaho a little too much of it.
Play a Mary Fuck Kill over here? I don't know.
Let's talk about the big Christmas release starring Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence.
Christmas.
Passengers.
Krampus 2.
What is this? I thought this was about three different movies.
This looks amazing.
Does it?
You didn't like it? I think this looks fucking phenomenal.
I was sold by the ending, but I didn't understand what I was looking at for half of it.
I disagree. I mean, I think that that's...
Reference.
That
what am I looking at?
I think that's a good thing. You know, I think that that means this movie has a lot to offer. In the sense that these people are going to wake up. They're going to be stuck on this fucking ship for a while. So they're going to be hanging out. And then shit's going to go down. They're going to have to fight for their survival.
What I think this will prove,
so I'm good.
One way
I'm,
or another, I mean, is if Chris Pratt's the real deal. If he's an actor or if he's a leading man,
or if,
I mean, is he lucked out?
Jennifer Lawrence? I mean, we have two, what you may consider, you know, if you will, at this point, powerhouses.
Or next generation stars.
Stars, yeah. So with the current downtrend in payment to stars, right, with the money they're earning is less, because you have movies like Passengers, which is sold on the idea of the fucking idea and not on the stars, do these people matter? Does it make a difference? You know, because this is essentially what, like Gravity, right, meets what, something else, right? I mean, it's the idea here that's ultimately selling it, right? Is it not? Is this, because this was the script that was on the blacklist, right?
I just think it's interesting that they have these two next generation stars, and they're talking mm-hmm. about guys like Hanks and Cruz and Denzel are still filling seats, but nobody else is in this younger generation is right. going to be able to.
Well,
and
then
you
Robbie
have these
will,
two
apparently.
People that if this hits, I mean, you're talking now possibly about, you know, a pair. You probably see them together in a movie in some sense. I mean, they might be the next.
Well, I wish that
Hanks and Meg Ryan. You might see them in the next jokey comedy.
Well, that didn't turn out so well for Meg Ryan. I mean, the reality is, you know, you're looking at Jennifer Lawrence comes up and then chooses certain roles, right, and kind of falls by the wayside, but earns awards. Chris Pratt, who's coming up right now, is picking roles that are going to put him in the mainstream, right, in the limelight. So, is this just going to be another step? Like, where do they go after this? I guess does Jennifer Lawrence go back to doing, you know, silly awards corridor movies, and Chris Pratt continues to do Jurassic World type stuff and getting bigger. Right. I mean, that's the difference, right? I guess talking about,
I just think this trailer is cut too, to appeal to everybody. It's got a romantic angle to bring in a certain demographic. It's got the sci-fi
movie,
stuff.
I think we'll play like that. Right. I mean, you're clearly seeing like a second act being presented first and then going back right. to first act and then going into second act and going into end of second act, third act.
Right? I was sold by the end of the trailer. I'm just saying that first of all, I think the Christmas release date's an ingenious release date. Otherwise, you put it on Valentine's Day, but that's going to make it's going to do a big splash, I think, box office wise. And we'll see if this is the kind of movie that will, you know, captivate audiences the way that the big star Christmas releases did of years past, because we haven't seen those in a long time. They're really gimmick based, or they don't perform that well. It's been a long time since you've seen a Christmas
movie
really take off.
Interesting thing about this is the ad campaign itself, which is Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt's face, right? And that's it.
That's what I'm saying. It reminds me of an old ad campaign.
Yeah.
A 90s ad campaign.
Yeah, so it's an interesting movie. But I think this will be great. You don't?
I think
great,
it's
going to
be
I don't know. What
watchable.
Do you think?
I think it might be a Solaris type deal. You know?
I don't know. I think better than Solaris. I think they're going to do this a little more Hollywood rather than. I think they're going to go a little less weird on it.
A little less cerebral. I still think
even though Solaris is great, but yeah.
Solaris is great, but I think that Sunshine is vastly underrated. People should see that ASAP.
It is, but it again is weird.
So. Yeah, it's a quirky movie.
But great movie. Yeah, obviously, I mean, the score from that.
Oh, it's been used in every trailer.
You'll hear everywhere, yes.
You've never noticed that you've heard that music from that movie all the time because they use it in previews all the time. Let's talk about a little quirky docudrama here. I guess it's a reenactment documentary, and that's The Lovers and the Despot, about two Japanese film stars that were kidnapped.
Korean.
By Kim Jong-un, Korean
South
film
Korean,
stars.
Yeah.
That were kidnapped and brought over to North Korea and held there for years to make films for the communist movement there. This is a crazy little story and an extremely interesting-looking documentary. Had you seen this trailer before?
Yeah, this came out in June. This came out months ago.
I'd never seen it. I saw it recently.
They made a big deal about it. Well, I think it went through film festivals and stuff. I think that's why. And now it's coming out on DVD, maybe? I don't know. But yeah, there's another big hoopla about it. It looks really good, right? I never saw the Chuck Norris thing, but kind of like within that realm of communism and film, right?
Same I love thing. These reenactment ones. It's almost like Man on Wire, you know, where they reenact it. It almost becomes a Ocean's 11 type suspense or Getaway or, you know, White Knights type movie that really, you ever see White Knights, that old Mikhail Brishnikov, Gregory Hines film?
No.
In the 80s? That's a good defecting movie. I always like, there was like a subgenre in the 80s, the defecting movie, you know, like always guys trying to defect. We were keeping from the KGB and whatnot. But this looks interesting. I can't wait to see. I'm really getting more and more into documentary as I get older, and narrative films are becoming so just boring in a lot of ways, or bland, that these documentaries, there's great work being done in the documentary sector.
Yeah.
What the fuck is Doggy Dog? Can we talk about this for a second?
Well, let me tell you my emotional reaction to this trailer. At first I thought, this is dog shit, right? This is some fucking stupid Nicolas Cage piece of shit movie. And by the end of it, I thought, this is so weird, I want to see it.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. This is Paul Schrader doing Paul Thomas Anderson.
What is going on?
I couldn't tell you, but it looked interesting.
It's so fucking weird, man. I mean, this movie starts off so basic.
Bland.
You know, straight to video thriller. Some guys are essentially ex-cons who finally get out of prison. And they meet up again. William Defoe and Nicolas Cage. And they meet up again to pull off another heist. So basically, they're going to kidnap a baby from some mobster that some other mobster wants to have kidnapped, right? And so you explain to me what the fuck happens after that.
A lot of visual mayhem.
What the hell?
Looks like things are going all bad and hell's breaking loose. And this is now like Cage's.
This is like Scorsese in the 90s, I swear. Like, it's just weird, right?
Which was, you know, some of that was written by Schrader, like Bringing Out the Dead with Nicolas Cage. And, you know, Nicolas Cage and him just did The Dying of the Light, which was, I think, taken from them and
terrible.
Recut. So they both disowned that movie. Anton Yelchin, one of his last performances.
It's a terrible movie, yeah.
I couldn't even get through it. I thought The Runner was even better than that. And this is, I thought, here we go again with this wannabe crazy Nicolas Cage kind of style, almost Bad Lieutenant-esque. But then it got fairly interesting, and I thought I would watch this crazy mayhem. It looked like The Trust, which I wanted to see, that Nicolas Cage one with Elijah Wood.
Right, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it's a really well-cut trailer, because it almost misleads you in the beginning to thinking this is some dog shit thing, and then it says, oh, wait, no, that's not true. This is fucking weird, and we got some shit up our sleeves for you. Yeah, so I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I would watch this.
I like the fact that Cage, even though he's been relegated to this B-movie status, he's doing a small appearances in big movies. He has a small role in Snowden, that he is still looking for something quote-unquote good, you know, something different, not just doing your average Steven Seagal bit where you show up on stage for 3 hours and you don't do your ADR and this. He's still actually putting things into it.
I mean, obviously these guys have kind of worked with Schrader before, so...
It's a great cast, though, with Defoe and him.
In a way, he's just kind of doing the same thing, isn't he?
I just like the fact that he's not doing, you know, the Con Air routine, or he did a couple of those, but he's not just going that route. He's not going the action star route.
He's looking for a character. He's open to more than just a Steven Seagal type thing. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I like that.
Did you ever see that really low budget? It was a straight to DVD or straight to HBO release back in the day. I saw it on HBO. It was at Red Rock West. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, Red Rock West is really weird and good.
Great fucking movie. Honestly, that's a really, really underrated movie about a guy who comes to town, and Dennis Hopper's in it, and hires Nicolas Cage to kill his wife, and neo-noir. People are talking about Hell or High Water right now. Which,
I mean, that was before he was really all that famous.
That was back in the
day.
I mean,
that was a movie
he was still
made
doing Honeymoon
in
Vegas.
Famous.
Yeah. I think the only time I'd seen him ever do anything violent before that was in Wild at Heart, where he was absolutely out of fucking control. But I thought Red Rock West was to me like, oh wow, this is a guy who could be an action star. And then obviously they turned him into one very, very slowly.
Yeah.
Plus Kiss of Death. He was great in Kiss of Death as the bad guy. Probably the best thing about that. We should do a Nicolas Cage retrospective sometime.
Yeah, I know. You forget so much. I mean, so much before even leaving Las Vegas, right? I mean, we're talking about Red Rock West and everything else. I mean, all before the Oscar, you know?
Oh, yeah. This is all before that.
Yeah,
It Could Happen to You. I mean, Trapped in Paradise.
Right. I mean, that's
Aimless and Andy.
I mean, there's so much, you know, pre-Oscar. even versus post-Oscar, even versus post-tax problems, right? I mean, this dude's been done so many movies and so many great movies that there's eras to his work at this point.
Oh, for sure. I think of like the Face Off to Gone in 60 Seconds era, the action era, you know, those four mm-hmm. years there.
Well, City of Angels.
The Rock even, you
right?
know.
But that's what I mean. But City of Angels, he does right with, well, I mean, The Rock happened right same time around the Oscar, right? But City of Angels is right there, right at their Face Off. So
and the 8mm.
I mean, he does so many weird fucking things, just all, you know, just all spread out. But they're all very similar performances, even within that stuff. Like pre-Oscar, you have to admit were weird, zany, just really fucking crazy performances. And after that, they got a bit more honed in, you know, a little more mainstream.
He seemed to focus it a little bit more. He wasn't just a ball of energy. He seemed to figure out when to turn it on and off a little bit better. I think the best example of that is Matchstick Men, particularly in that scene where he's in the pharmacy. But extremely capable actor and interesting. I've always liked Nicolas Cage. I always will. And I followed him down some strange rabbit holes in his direct-to-DVD career at this point. Yeah. Particularly Paying the Ghost. That was maybe one of the strangest. All right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 308 here at the Movie Mavericks podcast. We want to thank you guys, as always, for joining us on the podcast. Reviews can be found at moviemavericks.com, and our past podcasts can be found there as well as iTunes, TalkShoe, and Stitcher, or wherever else you may be getting these podcasts from. We want to thank you guys, as always, for joining us on these episodes. And speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!